Spike scan initiated. I'm picking up a podcast arriving. Wait. Designation: Forge the Narrative.
Hello and welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined by Adam Camilleri.
G'day, everybody.
Red Powell and Tanya Gates.
What up?
Hey, everybody.
We are the Bellow Souls Podcast. How are y'all doing, everybody? We're going to talk about the Thousand Suns in this episode. We're going to be talking about some standout detachments. We're going to be talking about some special characters. We're going to be answering the questions of, is Magnus still public enemy number one? And did he do anything wrong? And then get y'all's thoughts.
Yes, he did. He did everything wrong. He did the exact opposite thing of what his dad told him to do. So,
I mean, but who hasn't? Who hasn't gone against a parental figure every now and then? And who else has been damned so hard?
Yeah. Yeah. Listen to your parents. They have a lot of life experience.
Look, I want to talk about the Codex for sure, but I also want to point out that, you know, Magnus, while I am not one of those, you know, Magnus fanboys of the, you know, that's come out of the woodwork to defend, you know, what is a tragic character, which I can agree with. Like the Council of Nicaea, when they were deciding about who can, who should and shouldn't be psychers, and all those other psychers looking at him like he's the bad guy, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's a little sketchy, you know? And then, you know, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's a book that details what Magnus may or may not have done. Well, and you can make your own decision.
I always felt like it was pretty rough because everyone else had a little bit of psychic going on in their legion, like a little bit of Librarius, a little bit of here and there. And then that was their kind of whole identity. And then essentially everyone pointed at them and said, you are not right. You are not correct. And everything that you are is not to be anymore. That would be rough.
Yeah.
Especially having all your peers, your brothers, and like your family essentially saying, all the parts of you, we don't want anymore.
So it's Burning of Prospero, and what's the other companion book to it? I'm blanking on the name, but there's two books, you know, written about this engagement.
Should be called Tears of Magnus. It's not, but it should be.
I forget the other one. I'll put them in the show notes, but they're great books, and they tell a lot of this story that is part of like the core of the Horus Heresy and then translates into the 41st millennium that has a lot of attachment to this, to of course this legion, but to the base foundational lore of Warhammer. So really cool to see this manifested into a codex, I believe.
So it's a Thousand Suns, then Burning of Prospero, then the Crimson King, and then the Magnus the Red Primarch Mont novel.
So yeah, that's the order, but those first two you mentioned are like the ones that came out in I don't say chronological order, but came out really close to each other that you were supposed to read one after the other to get the full story of that. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I do think the Thousand Suns was also the first standalone Chaos Legion Codex back in 7th, is that?
Yeah, because it came out with the triumvirate that Magnus was in, right? Wasn't the end times. It was whatever it was called.
Psychic Awakening or right before? So, or I think it was right before that.
Psychic Awakening was 8th edition. 7th edition was
Gathering Storm.
Gathering Storm, that's right. Yeah, then we got our first Primarch for Chaos Space Marines.
Magnus, of course, amazing model. But let's get into the Codex. Codex is up for pre-order right now. If you're listening to this, Codex is up for pre-order. Games Workshop was nice enough to send us a copy of that. Thank you very much for that. And we get to talk about it. So y'all have had a chance to feast your peepers on that. What did y'all stand out thoughts from the get?
I really think that it's a good change from a more casual play perspective. I feel like the index had a lot of moving parts with the cabal points, and that was a little bit difficult for new players or casual players to manage this sort of like resource that is always changing throughout the game. So I think that it's made a little bit more streamlined and a little bit more elegant. And I think that it's going to be a little bit more manageable for newer players.
100% agree. In addition, it's essentially the index kind of pigeonholed itself to certain models being auto takes in order to reach a certain critical mass of cabal points in order to kind of get the army rule functioning. And so you were priced into this kind of hero hammer archetype for your list because you had to have this many cabal points in order to do the things you wanted to do every game with your army rule. And now it's been diverted away from that. I echo Tanya's sentiments completely. Far less bean counting, far less terms and conditions on all your bits and pieces, and far more units that we'll see play.
Oh, that's encouraging. You know, it's like, especially in these kind of carve out codexes to where they don't get the full research, you know, the full list of things that the cast Space Marines get.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, they only had the kind of smallest sandbox of units to use already, and then you had to have Cabal point economy going in your favor, so you had to zone it down even further. But now, kind of, the play is very much open. Of course, it'll still trigger all your abilities will still trigger off cycle models, but they've done really well in saying that all your aspiring sorcerers and all your Terminator sorcerers and stuff like that inside your Scarab Occult units, like your sergeants, will now count as casters because they're not Dusty Boys. They're real life, living, breathing, you know, Chaos Space Marines, and should they're psychers, they should get to use the stuff. They always have.
You're referring to the fact that there is, due to the Rubike ritual, a lot of the innards of the Thousand Suns is dust. All this
time. Yeah, it is just dust, and that's where I was getting at with the sandbox as well. Ba-dum-tsh, hopefully somebody caught that. Operating in a sandbox.
Hey. Let us know in the comments, please, if you got both of those.
But the army rule has changed completely. So some people who've played other editions of the game will remember what it took to have to make a psychic test. A lot of the time, you had to roll a leadership test in order to manifest psychic powers, turn on your force weapons, stuff like that. We're back to something similar like this 4,000 Suns. And but what you have to do is you have to roll two dice or three dice, depending if you want to take the risk, and then consult the warp charge value of your associated ritual. And they've given you four rituals, and I gotta say I'm very, very high on these options. So the way this works is you roll two dice and consult the value of the associated ritual you want to do. All these trigger at the start of the shooting phase, and all of them are listed to require you to be within 24 inches of the target and line of sight, so there's no more over and under shenanigans. So you roll your two dice, and then if you like, you can choose to roll a third dice. If you choose to roll the third dice, you risk taking some mortal wounds on your unit, not on the character, which is very, very good. And if you roll any doubles in those in that three dice compilation, you will take D3 mortal wounds on your unit. So you can take it off the ablative wounds onto your Zangors.
It's doubles or triples, just in case, by the way. So yeah. It's like the same dice come up more than once. You're in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, which is it's actually not a big downside, to be honest. And the other thing that's really cute is that if you fail to manifest, you can try the same ritual again with another caster, with another psyker, which I found is like as far as generalship and creating overlapping redundancies is really good. You're just gonna get these things off if you want to. It might just take you more than one attempt because each one of these rituals has two brackets. So it has the minimum cost to get the minimum buff, and then a much more powerful buff if you reach higher. So if you get like most of them are like 10 plus on the dice, yeah.
And you have to be alive to get the thing off. So like you could potentially extinguish yourself in this. Yeah. I mean, again, it is D3 mortal wounds on the unit. So hopefully you're doing this, you know, but you never know, like desperate times.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, dude. Absolutely.
Go for the ritual and see what happens.
And you know, you've got guys like Magnus who don't have a unit, who's just going to be taking D3 mortal wounds if they're rolling in doubles or triples. But he's got a lot more wounds to spend. So, you know, you kind of get away with that. And of course, he's on two wounds left. Chip, don't roll the third dice, do you? You're just not going to roll that third dice.
I do like this, the fact that, you know, you get something if you get the lower number. But if you roll higher, you risk it. You basically, you know, you're burning that candle, brightly, which is, you know, things like seems on brand for psychic powers and sorcery and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Then you might get an enhanced.
The first one, I think, is possibly the best one. It's like, so the minimum effect is you pick an enemy unit within 24 invisible to this one trying to manifest the ritual, and your whole army gets real once to hit against them. If you go for the second value, so the first value is 5, if you go to the second value, which is a 10, so on 3d6 trying to go for a 10, and there's ways to get pluses, of course, and rerolls and things like that, you get Oath of Moment. You get full rerolls to hit against that unit for your entire army. And like, and you're telling me Oath of Moment is one of four options? This is a good army rule.
And that's the easiest one to get.
Yeah.
On this. I mean, not the 10 plus, of course, but, you know, the temporal, sorry, the Destiny's Ruin going for the warp charge of 5. Like, you can do part of this very reliably.
Agreed. Any of the others jump out to you guys?
Doombolt is still there. It's been a sort of staple in the index detachment, and it is still there. So the warp charge is 7, and if you successfully cast it, then you can select one enemy unit within 24 inches and visible to the manifesting model. And it does specifically say that it excludes units with lone op that are not part of an attached unit and are not within 12 of the manifesting model. So it doesn't get around lone op, which is a nice clarification. And then that unit suffers D3 mortal wounds. And then the extended value is 11, and then it's D3 plus 3 mortal instead. And we'll get there, but there is a way that you could actually cast that.
Spicy. So you can still double Doombolt, but one of the issues with Doombolt in the previous iteration is that it was so good that all you would try and do every turn is cast two Doombolts and then not die. And then like, cool, I'm gonna do nothing. I'm not gonna move where you can see me. This idiot is just gonna run out, Doombolt, and run back. And essentially, you would try and win a game by like 5 points just by doing this one simple trick. Doctors hate this one simple trick. Actually, no, the Warhammer community hated this one simple trick, and we were not a fan.
Look, it was it worked.
It did. It did work. Twist of Fate is still here as well. This one will on a 9, so quite hard to cast for the minimum level, but you get plus 1 AP against the target within 24 invisible.
I like it, though, that this makes you want to try for the high number.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it's not a big difference. So you see the other, we see previous ones, like it's the double the value on Destiny's Ruin. It's 5 for the real ones, but it's double to 10 for the big version. The Doombolt is a 7 and then plus 4 more to get to the 11. This one is only 3 different. It's a 9 for the min, but it's 12 for the max. And so, but the thing is, I think the 9 is kind of good enough as it is anyway.
Yeah, like, but you're if not just having two dice trying for a 9, you're going to roll for the 3.
Unless you have pluses to cast.
Sure, I mean, yeah, but just flat footed, exactly. you're going to try to roll the dice, which means, you know, you're risking it.
Yeah, well, you don't need to declare which one you're going for. You don't need to declare that I'm trying to go for the 12. You just roll for the Twist of Fate, and if you've got the 9, you have the buff. You've got the 12, you've got the big buff. And the big buff here is plus 2 AP against chosen target unit. So 9 is plus 1 AP. Your whole army just gets plus 1 AP against this target. If you get the 12, it's plus 2 AP. And I gotta tell you, so this is a little bit of foreshadowing, but because everyone only auto took the Flamers on all their Rubricae units, they've given another AP to the Inferno Bolters. And that's the Combi Bolters, the pistols. Every bolt gun in this book has 2 AP on it. So you're telling me I could have a Melter's AP on my bolt guns. I could have AP4 bolt guns. That can't not be good. That can't be bad.
Seems good. I mean, you're forcing basically everything that you want to shoot at to an invulnerable save, which is always better with a lot of volume of fire. So
yeah, like I'm not sure if they're better than the Flamers, but it's actually a question now where you're like, I could just like have AP freaking 4 on these bad boys.
I have two questions for everyone. Are there demons in this?
Yes, there are.
Are there vindicators in this?
Yes, there are.
Yes, there is.
And defilers.
And predators.
Look, they got a lot of tools. Like this is a very reach out and touch somebody army.
Yeah, I would like to say that I do not believe, I might be wrong, but I do think I'm correct in saying I don't think this army lost any data sheets from Index to Codex.
You mean Spectre's still there, Spawn are there?
Every special character, Spawn is still there. Yeah. Like I said, if the Defiler and the Helldrake are still there, everything's still there as far as I'm concerned. look no further.
Defiler's getting a lot of talk recently. Dude. So you know,
and this one's going to get a lot of talk too.
We can jump to some data slates.
Well, I mean, we might as well. Let's just go ahead and knock out our favorite new Chaos unit. It's brand new. Never seen before. Very updated and modern design. Defiler. I love it. Hey, I'm all about this thing. I mean, I spent all of the last time that we were on here talking about the Khorne version, and I'm just going to jump straight to the T'Zinch Thousand Suns version here. So again, my favorite ability, Scuttling Walker, where this thing, thanks to the fact that it's got spider legs, can do everything you'd expect a tank to do, which is just blow through walls. Of course, 4 inches or less in height. But this next one, Destroyer of Futures, is the ability. Because everything else, now, admittedly, this is, you know, I may say it's not exactly the same as our favorite Khorne version, because it's Reaper auto cannon and its Defiler cannon. They don't have rapid fire, so I'm sorry. However, it does have this Destroyer Futures ability, which each time you target this unit with the fire Overwatch stratagem, hits are scored on unmodified hit rolls of 5+ when resolving that stratagem. For each of these attacks, target an enemy unit within 9 inches of one or more Thousand Sun Psyker units from your army. Hit is scored on an unmodified hit roll of 4+ instead. And that puts Overwatch in a really strong point, given the weapons that this thing can take. It remains a constant threat. It's not something to be underestimated.
It also has Feel No Pain.
Toughness 10, well. 14 wounds, 5+ invulnerable save, and a 6+ Feel No Pain. So that is, you know, a nice like bundle of stats.
Agreed.
Now, I mean, we're not talking about necessarily army composition yet about, you know, can you even fit this in here? Like, there's the Mutilith Vortex Beast is still there. You know, there's
very good.
The Primarch. We'll talk about Magnus here in a few minutes, which, you know, I've never considered Magnus necessarily an auto take and maybe isn't still, but I will say every bit still is just as powerful, I think.
So I'm going to go out on a limb here and I'll say I believe Magnus might be the best done Primarch we've seen. He is perfectly takeable in every archetype, in every single one of the detachments in this book, and every single way you can play and build them. He is a takeable, amazing resource, but he is not so good you would take him all the time. And that it's without thought, you know? He's not so good that you would just auto-windmill slam every single list. And that's how I want my Primarchs to be.
Yeah.
I want them to be worth considering in every build, but not brain dead in every army, you know?
That's a great balance spot to be in, I think, too.
It is.
Because it's like you can have him on the table and you're not playing just for the love. It actually does something for your army and has that gravitas you think that it should have because of its stature in the lore.
Well, let's go in and I'll tell you about Magnus. His stat line is exactly the same, 14-inch move, toughness 11, 2+, 4+, 2+ armor, 4+, invulnerable save, 16 wounds and 6 OC. His ranged brackets have gone better. The same amount of shots at the same range, but both strengths have gotten better. His gaze of Magnus was strength 9, now is strength 11, which is a fantastic breakpoint. And his Inches Firestorm was, I believe, strength 5, is now strength 6. He's still exactly the same in combat, having dev wounds on his big damage 3 sweeps at 16-3-3. And then he has very similar Crimson King abilities, his Primarch abilities, so to speak. He still has the -1 damage on himself, still has the hilarious ability you'll probably never use to give your opponent's weapons hazardous, and then it has a 6-inch aura of +2 move to Thousand Suns units.
So this is the unearthly power rule here. At the start of the battle round, select one of the abilities in the Crimson King section. Until the start of the next battle round, this model has that ability. So it is, you have to do it at the beginning of the battle round and have a little bit of anticipation to get it through to the next battle round.
The second one is actually his better ability. Of course, -1 damage is fan-freaking-tastic, making yourself and other T-Suns units faster. But Lord of the Planet of the Sorcerers, this model can attempt up to 2 rituals per turn instead of 1. And each time it attempts a ritual, +2 to the result. So he is your reaching for the stars, trying for the second bracket pretty much every time caster. And then if you combo him, so the biggest way to get the most pluses to cast your rituals is to have Magnus next to a Vortex Beast. And Vortex Beast has an aura of +1 to cast as well. So Magnus can be casting 2 rituals at +3 on 3d6. Which, you know, you're averaging, you know, about a 9 on 3d6, give or take, a 9 to a 10 on 3d6, and then add +2. So your average cast is add +3.
You're opening up that Destiny free, like on demand.
Yeah, literally, he very consistently casts the second brackets of all of the rituals, the psychic rituals. So he's very good for that.
I know we're moving kind of quickly here, but the Gaze of Magnus, Devastating Wound, Psychic Attack, 24 inches, 8d3 +3 attacks. It's on 2 strength 11, -2, 3 damage, and that, you know, could be hopping to Devastating Wounds. That's big damage. And then the Zinch's Firestorm Blast ignores cover, d6 +3, so a lot of shots, hitting on 2s, of course, strength 6, -1, 2 damage. So just a beast, powerhouse.
Absolutely, like,
buffs your army, has cool abilities, does the ritual, so does what the core thing of your army, and is no slouch in any form of combat.
Mm. He's up there with the Silent King as the like one of the most well-rounded data sheets in the game, where does a bit of everything well.
And can deep strike. I mean,
deep strike.
So bad. Yep. Deadly Demise D6. That's the other round and out. So a lot of good stuff there. While we're on the subject of special characters, let's talk about Ahriman. Ahriman, of course, also very important to the Thousand Sons. Some mavens consider him the savior of the Thousand Sons. Leave that up for debate. But Ahriman on the disc, moving to 10, toughness of 4, 3 plus save, 4 plus invulnerable save, 6 wounds, OC 2, which is kind of cool for a character there. Special abilities here. Scryer of Fates. If your army includes this model after both have deployed their armies, you can select up to 3,000 Suns units from your army and redeploy them. When doing so, you can set those units up in strategic reserves if you wish, regardless of how many units are already in strategic reserves. What an amazing ability that is, if you ask me.
Yeah, fantastic ability to have on just on a data sheet.
And then the Arch Sorcerer of Tzeentch. Each time this model attempts a ritual, add 1 to the psychic test. So, you know, I'm not saying it's a junior Magnus, but, you know, maybe Ahriman and a Vortex Beast, you're still getting the on-demand rerolls.
Agreed.
What do y'all think of Ahriman?
I think it's interesting that you can't take him on foot anymore. He's got to go on the disc.
Yeah, I found that interesting as well. And he also has sort of, I think this is the first time I've seen this combo of keywords, but he has infantry and mounted. So he's got to be.
Because he can either join the Rubric Marines or the Sangor Enlightened.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. He can't join Sangor, but like, okay, so he goes one way or the other.
Mm.
Which makes for some interesting options given what they have out there for detachment.
Yeah, I agree.
Digging on that. So yeah, let's go up to the detachments. What is standing out for y'all as the things to watch for? Is there one that plays very similar to what the army does today?
Go ahead.
No, you go. No, you go, right?
No, I mean, as far as today. Yeah, they kind of took it's what we've seen in similar regards where the index detachment has like for Death Guard has become the army rule in a lot of ways, and then they kind of built off from there. And I think that the rituals, the psychic rituals, essentially became the army rules at large, and now you've got these detachments. I think the first one, of course, out the gate in very similar fashion, just like the Berserker War Horde continued. The Grand Coven seems a lot like the expansion of the index, which is add 6 inches to the range characteristic of range psychic weapons equipped by your thousand models, which is cool, especially given a lot of the now that. You know, the proliferation of all of these psychic weapons. And then psychic maelstrom, each time a Thousand Suns model from your army makes an attack with a psychic weapon, add 1 to the wound roll. And then Wrath of the Immaterium, psychic weapons equipped by Thousand Suns models from your army have the devastating wounds ability. So just everything you've been talking about between Magnus and the sorcerer in charge of each squad of whatever, there's a lot to be played into with psychic weapons there. And then the enhancements are very similar. One of those being manifesting ritual while resolving that ritual adds 6 inches to its range, Lord of Forbidden Lore. That's pretty good given some of those abilities. And then this is the one that I think you were alluding to, Tanya, with Incandeum, if I'm saying that right. Once per battle, when selecting a ritual for the bear to attempt, you can select Doombolt, even if a model from your army has already manifested that ritual this phase. So there's a way you can pull it off twice. That one seems kind of standard, but real quick before we jump off that or jumping from that, I was really excited for the All is Dust one.
Mm.
I'm a big fan of putting power armor on the table in mass, and the Rubricae Phalanx detachment rule All is Dust. Each time an attack with an unmodified damage characteristic of 1 is allocated to a Rubricae model from your army, add 1 to any armor saving throw made against that attack. I think that's now I know there's tons of damage to aspects out there, so it is a balanced rule. It's not like how it used to be where everything where they could just absorb a lot of everything, and so certain things that are tooled to take out Space Marine being damaged to is not going to apply here. But in a lot of cases, I think this makes them pretty tough, and I I'm a huge fan of putting power armor forward, and the first enhancement out of this detachment is the Risen Rubricae, which at the start of the declare battle formation step, select either two Rubricae battle line units from your army or one other Rubricae unit from your army, so like Terminators. Models in the selected units have the Infiltrator's ability. So being able to infiltrate, 20 Rubricae up into the field, two squads of 10, seems pretty good.
Or even a 10-man squad of Terminators right in the middle of
that's
the board.
Right. Starting up.
Well, what's even wilder about that is that the bearer of the enhancement doesn't need to be in either of those units that get infiltrated.
Right.
Doesn't need to be, and it doesn't need to be on the table. It could be in reserve, and these two guys, these two guys get infiltrated. Which I think is absolutely wild. And because there's some things that you want to do. There's two other enhancements in here that I think if you wanted to do 2x10 Rubrics right up the table, give one of the unit bolters and then, of course, two Soul Reaper cannons because they have got an extra AP as well. That unit gets +1 to hit from the Lord of the Rubricae. So they're just going to hit on twos with their bolt guns and Soul Reapers. And of course, you don't put that in a Flame Squad because they don't roll the hit. But then you take an Infernal Master and give them the Stave Abominus, which means the bearer's melee weapons have sustained hits DE3 and devastating wounds. And the Infernal Master has retained the ability to flip a dice to a 6. So if you need, you can just make sure devastating wounds go through on a target. Or you can flip a 6 and get D3 like sustained hits on your melee attacks. So really good.
That does sound very, very powerful.
I think like the stratagems in this detachment are also pretty dang good.
Agreed.
Like this particular detachment, the Rubricae Phalanx to me was the obvious standout. And I think also because it helps you to play the different Rubricae units the way you think that they should be played. So we think about all this giant unit with like its juiced up bolters, right? And then you can play Ardent Automata for one command point in your movement phase just after a Rubricae unit from your army falls back, and now you have fall back and shoot and charge. So you're not going to be losing any of your effectiveness if you get locked in combat.
That's a great call out, because a lot of these stratagems that do that are fallback, shoot, or charge. It's not both of them, and then also for that one command point investment. So that's value town right there.
And if anybody's played versus the Thousand Suns a lot, man, tapping a unit of Rubricae with a Rhino is a game-winning strategy, usually, against Thousand Suns, because they can't usually punch their way out of a cardboard box. Essentially, you've just got the Aspiring Sorcerer with their little stave attacks at AP 1, D3 damage. So you can't even shut them down by tapping them with a vehicle or, a unit of scouts or whatnot.
Another aspect here, I mean, I know this is just situational, but they can fire one unit and charge in another. So it's not even situational or dependent upon them firing at the unit they fell back from. Like you could have this thing bouncing around and doing mad damage.
Yeah. This next one I like is very cute. It's Revenge of the Rubricae. It's 1 CP. It's in your opponent's shooting phase just after a Thousand Sun Psycho model from your army is destroyed. One Rubricae unit from your army within 6 of that Psyker when it was destroyed. After the attacking unit has shot, your Rubricae unit can shoot as if it was your shooting phase, but when resolving that attack, it can only target the enemy unit that destroyed your Psyker model. I'm here to tell you, remember what I said about the Psykers? The sergeants in the units being psychers, you can choose to just have that unit, that model die. It's not a character. You can just choose to have your psyker dead. And then let's just say someone's, maybe foolish enough to run out to you with maybe they've got some decent shooting options. Maybe they're trying to kill one Scarab Occult Terminator before they charge in. And you're just like, well, I don't want to get charged and locked up with you. So I'm going to have my Aspiring Sorcerer die. And now this unit of 9 now Scarab Occult Terminators is going to obliterate you for 1 CP. Just going to see you later, take him off the table. I think that is an exceptionally good stratagem. Also, I should let you know that the Aspiring Sorcerer's got what I call the knob treatment. They have an extra wound. So the Rubricae Sorcerer, the Rubric Sorcerer, has 3 wounds. And the Scarab Occult one has, 4 wounds. Oh, yeah, or Exarchs. Not as cool a word as knob, though.
Yeah, no. Anytime you can work knob in the casual conversation, you're right.
And the balance, Tanya, you brought it up, the strong balance in this is that it's not just the Rubric Marines. The Terminators are count as all those Rubric units. Mm. So all the stratagems aren't just Rubric Marines. It's also the Terminators that get bundled into it. And I want to point out the Sorcerer and Terminator armor. I think they did a really good job. There's lots of different sorcerers that you can pull in and throw into the different into the Rubric Marines, but particularly the Sorcerer and Terminator armor that goes with the Scarab Cult Terminators. He gives the whole unit lethal hits. Okay, that's great. Just give them strength to the weapons. They're high AP, right, and how the rituals work. But the next part being that in your shooting phase, after this model's unit has shot, select one enemy unit hit by one or more of those attacks made with a psychic weapon until the end of the phase. Each time a friendly Thousand Suns unit makes an attack that targets that enemy unit, add one to the hit roll, which that just you're going to be able to choose and pick up
unit. I'm a huge fan. Also, I will let everybody know that the previous Scarab Cult Terminator datasheet rule has been much enhanced, where they just have minus one to wound now. It's not minus one if strength is higher and they've got an attached character or whatever it was before. Just flat minus one to wound. So if you are, you know, strength five, their toughness five, you're winning on fives. Your strength four, you're winning on sixes. Hell, if you're strength nine, you're winning them on fours. Like, you need to be strength 10 or better, or have higher strength and plus one to wound to get better than a four plus to wound to get these guys.
That's pretty strong. That's going to be
Very durable. Very durable.
Before we take a quick break, I want to talk briefly about the Warped Forged Cabal. And it's for the vehicles, basically. Each time a Thousand Suns unit from your army is selected to shoot or fight, apply one of the following when resolving those attacks. So, you know, shoot or fight, by the way. Remember, we talked about defilers, some other things in here. Is that the vehicle unit is within 6 inches of a one or more friendly Thousand Suns Psyker models, can reroll one hit roll, one wound roll, and one damage roll. Otherwise, or there. But here's the spicy bit. Each time a Thousand Suns vehicle model from your army with deadly demise ability is destroyed while it's within 6 inches of one or more friendly Thousand Suns Psyker models, that model's deadly demise ability inflicts mortal wounds on a d6 of a 5 or better instead of a 6. Watch out.
As somebody who plays Dread Mob Orcs, I want that rule.
Yeah, I'd be real curious to see what builds into with these new detachments.
Yeah. So there's one, there's like... You can already see how good this is. And then, sure, there's a bunch of enhancement stuff. There's only one strat I need to tell you about, and that's Ensorcelled Infusion. One CP, 1,000 Suns vehicle from your army within 6 of 1,000 Suns Psyker. And pretty much all of this is about having a Psyker next to your vehicles. Your range weapons on your vehicle become psychic and get plus 1 to wound. One CP plus 1 to wound. I don't need to tell you how good that is. That's so strong.
Yeah. Add one to the wound roll. Yeah, that's crazy. Yep. Yeah, that's.
I also need to tell you the Thousand Suns Predator Destructor, their datasheet ability, and this is the last piece of the combo. I won't take any more time. Each time this model makes a range attack that targets a unit that isn't a monster or a vehicle that was hit by one or more psychic attacks made by a Thousand Suns Psyker from your army this phase, which includes Doombolt, improve the strength and AP of that attack by one. So, I'll just paint you a picture. The Predator Autocannon, of course, is strength 9, AP 1, 3 damage. It's going to get plus 1 AP if you combo it with a Psyker. And then it's going to get plus 2 possible AP from one of the rituals and plus 1 to wound. So we can be strength 9, plus 1 to wound, AP 4, 3 damage. Whew! Gimme. That's just that. The Laz Cannon's like AP 100. Doesn't matter.
AP, no cover. All right, well, we'll see y'all in just a minute. We're going to take a quick break, take a word from our sponsors. Be right back talking more about Thousand Suns.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey, everybody, we are back. Thanks a lot for checking out our sponsor there. Feel free to help, especially for these pre-orders for things that you know you're going to want. Get them in your hands. If you want to flesh out some things, do you need another Helldrake?
Everybody needs more than one, right? Yeah.
Or Defiler. Defiler.
There you go.
One of the biggest winners in this this round of Chaos Codex is the Defilers.
Because of Defilers.
Yeah.
And Demon Princes. Like the
100%.
Demon Princes kind of have a bit of a new lease on life.
Yeah.
And then let's talk about the Demon Princes in this codex.
And I love that. I mean, like, don't get me wrong. I think that the new Demon Princes that's come out is a great model. And I think that the wings that they did for it, modeling wise, are fantastic. However, I'm constantly taken back to the Demon Prince on foot because of the abilities that they've had. We've seen it play out. I mean, the Winged Demon Prince, we talked about it for Emperor's Children, is amazing. I like the Demon Prince on foot for World Eaters, but when it comes to Thousand Suns, just laying out the Demon Prince on foot and his abilities here. So they've all got this the lone op deal within 3 inches. We got that. The next part being though, okay, so base
kind within of Thousand Suns infantry unit. So just want to point that out. There are some like terms and conditions correct. On that. So it, true. I mean, but you can line it up.
You can, yeah. And so Spirit Snare is the second ability. Each time a friendly Thousand Sun Psyker model with the Cabal of Sorcerer's ability is destroyed, while within 9 inches of one or more models with this ability, select one of those models with this ability. Until the end of the battle, each time the selected model attempts a ritual, add one to the psychic test result to a maximum of two. That's a pretty big deal, in my opinion. You can easily, just like Adam said, you can start picking out those models and then you can start juicing up something like this Demon Prince.
Well, sorry to butt in. If you just had 5 Rubric Marines and an attached character, if that unit dies, you automatically have the +2 because the sergeant in the unit plus the attached character both have to be psychers by default, and you'd already max out your pseudo Magnus caster now.
That's right. That's right. That's a great point. He could just have a bodyguard of 6 people that are great. I mean, they're battle line, right? But then you take on this next part, though, which is going to make it a little harder for the opponent to do it as easily, especially if you're running the All is Dust attachment. But Glamour of Tzeentch, while it's an aura, while friendly Thousand Suns infantry unit is within 6 inches of this model, models in that unit have the stealth ability, which I think that's massive given the survivability and what we're talking about with these units all over the place. They're invulns, and now they're -1 to hit. That's big. And Thousand Suns infantry, I mean, again, we're talking about putting out larger numbers of the Terminators out there as well, with the -1 to wound and now stealth ability. And you know, if it's 1 damage, they get extra AP. That's a huge deal. I think that's a really big deal. Now the next part, so we go from them to the Demon Prince, with wings, and it has this, Aether Stride ability. Before I get to the Hunter of Souls, Aether Stride, which I wanted to highlight. When this model is set up on the battlefield using Deep Strike, it can perform an Aether Stride. If it does, it can be set up anywhere on the battlefield that is more than 3 inches away. So 6, you know, given the data slate. Until the end of the turn, it's Dark Blessing, which is the psychic 24 inches, 9 attacks, hitting on 2, strength 4, AP 1, D1, has sustained hits D3, and then until the end of the turn, it can't charge. So you're going to come in close. You won't be able to charge, but you can at least get it to places. And then it also has this Hunter of Souls ability. Each time this model makes an attack that targets a character unit, reroll a hit roll of 1 and a reroll a wound roll of 1. Each time this model destroys a character unit, this model regains up to D3 lost wound. And so in certain armies, especially ones that have tons of little characters here or there, it's going to start being able to pick things up and keep it in the fight.
So if it's targeting a psychic character or a psychic character unit, you get 4 rolls to hit and wound. And then if you kill a psychic character, you regain 3 wounds instead of D3. So I'm a huge fan of the Winged Demon Prince because one of the things, one of the identities we had previously for Thousand Suns, I described it in the first half here, is a pretty non-committal game plan of like little chips, little here, death by 1,000 cuts every turn, run out, double doom bolt. Maybe you throw out a unit of rubrics to clear an objective or get a point. But essentially, you're not doing much till about turn 3, Magnus comes out and tries to win the game. I love things in Thousand Suns that have aggressive intuition. To play them intuitively, use them aggressively. I like that for Thousand Suns. They don't get enough of that. And so this guy's perfect. Like a 6-inch deep strike, essentially auto-kill your unit of 10 cultists holding your back line, is just something that you couldn't say they had before. Like where Winged Demon Prince just comes down and is like, 5 scouts, lol, 9 shots at strength 4 AP 1, 1 damage, ignores cover, sustain hits D3 off the 6-inch deep strike, you are dead, or I'm going to doom bolt you as well, or I'm going to oath of moment you as well, or I'm going to, you know, give myself AP 2 or AP 3 on these shots as well. He's really good.
You don't necessarily have to rely on that. Sorry, Tanya. You don't have to rely on that Aether Stride. Sustain hits one comes basic on there with nine attacks. It's going to mount up and do a lot of damage. Sorry, Tanya.
I was just going to say, even if he does go back into your back line, wipe off whatever little unit you had on your home objective, he still moves 13 inches. So he's not stuck there. He's going to be back out into the fray in the middle of the table, causing problems for you if you don't deal with him right away.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan. And of course, to Demon Prince, the character, there was a lot of great enhancements to put on this guy as well.
And this may be the strongest case for the Demon Prince with wings. I think we've seen a lot of reason to take the walking Demon Prince. And this, although the movement's a big deal, you know, going actually getting in position the right thing, and this gets in position and does big effects.
You opened this segment saying that Demon Princes are like, straight up, they're the most takeable they've been in ages. Some armies back in editions past have been like, had one uber Demon Prince. I've been like, yeah, if I give it this enhancement and this detachment with this unit, this combo, it's crazy. I can make one crazy good Demon Prince. Every one of the cult legions can make a fantastic Demon Prince. And if even not, just a Demon Prince by itself is pretty good in every army. And I'm really happy about that.
An automatic like liability with some of the rules of the game. They seem to be statted correctly, effectively to make them the figures they should be. I mean, like figures of inspiration or whatever. What's the evil inspiration? for their legions and the other things on the tabletop. Like it's they're back. They're back. About the best way to describe it.
I've got it. Evil inspiration is just coercion.
Yeah. Or in Zinch's case, it's probably gaslighting.
My goodness.
I want to tell you guys about some of the goat-legged fellows of this codex, about the Zangors and so on. First and foremost, units of 20 Zangors are back. So I don't know where the whiteboard is in GW HQ where they crossed out 20 mans halfway through 9th edition, and then they rub that off and put 20 mans with a big tick next to it, because every cult legion has got I'm not sure if Empress Children has a unit of 20, but we've got 20 Berserkers are back. Can Jackals be 20s as well, Red?
They can.
20 Jackals. We've got 20 Zangors back. We've got it's a good time. 20 Poxwalkers. Thank God they didn't do 20 Plague Marines. We can't deal with that, guys. We're not ready.
We need to regrow. We need 20 Plague Marines.
But Zangors are back. They're kind of enhanced cultists in this book. They've got their toughness 4 instead of toughness 3. They've got a 6 up armor or invulnerable save, 1 wound, 1 OC. They scout 6 base, and then they have a uppy downy kind of ability. So at the end of your opponent's turn, if this unit is more than 6 horizontally away from all enemy units, you remove it from the battlefield, place it back into strategic reserve. I'm a big fan of them having that on there. And of course, they come with the Brayhorn, reroll advance and charge rolls made for the bearer and bearer's unit. And whilst it's within range of one or more objective markers, improve their leadership by 1 as well for the herd banner. Look, they're not going to be doing a bunch of damage, but they are pretty good, and utility wise, they're very good. I want to tell you guys about the Zangor Enlightened, because I don't think these guys have ever been better. I talked about utility units. I talk about utility units a lot, and having a utility unit that does meaningful damage and contributes to the game in other ways, apart from just standing on a point, getting and pushing a button or behind enemy lines or something, you can contribute in some other way. I'm always a big fan of. Yes, that's correct. But Zangor Enlightened with the Fate Caster Great Bows they are pushed. They are quite pushed in this book. So they come with their move 10, toughness 4, 5 up armor, 5 up invulnerable save, 2 wounds, OC2, which is quite nice. They have their once per turn reactive move, which is when enemy unit ends a normal advance or fallback move within 9. As long as you're not engaged in range, make a normal move up to D6. Always great to have on a utility unit. But they're great. They're Fate Caster Great Bows. Wow, I wish I could have a heavy bolter that was this good. Hits on 4s, fair enough. There are lots of ways to enhance that, though. With 2 shots at 30 inches, at strength 5, AP 2, 2 damage, with ignores cover, lethal hits, and precision. 3 premium keyword abilities. So, dude, these guys are good. A unit of three just puts out six attacks whilst going and getting your behind enemy lines. You're engaged on all fronts. Might just snipe a company commander out of a unit of guardsmen. Might just, you know, put a little bit of pain and a little bit of doubt in somebody's mind whether they can, you know, push out their fight's first unit because you've only got two wounds left on your Judicia in your unit of Blade Guard and you can't really push them out if you don't have fight's first and stuff like that. And I think very, very good.
I also think that it having an extra 6 inches, while on paper, an extra 6 inches, the range doesn't seem like that big of a deal. But most of your damage in Thousand Suns is still going to be mid-range 24 inches or less. So having that extra 6 inches, I think, can be really valuable.
That's a great point, actually. That's actually a very, very, very good point. AP2 with Ignores Cover as well. That's fantastic.
And throwing in the Shaman, did you throw that on there as well?
Yeah, I mentioned that ways to get pluses to hit. The Shaman just gives them plus one to hit. So they'll just hit on threes with a Shaman in there. Yeah, huge fan.
They're going to be practically invisible, too, if you're pushing all those Terminators and Magnus up in people's faces or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be very difficult to find the time to deal with them with these, and also effectively dealing with the other things in the Thousand Suns list.
Do you touch on the regular Zangors, though?
I did.
The Blobs 20, yeah.
The 20 Mants, yeah.
And they can go back into reserves. You were talking about recovering all those assets. I think that's a really valuable thing in Thousand Suns.
Totally agree as well. A little bit more scout as well, which I quite like, especially if you're going to be using the... I think they make their way into the Rubricate attachment as well, because if you're going to infiltrate units of Rubricate, having them like body blocked or supported by scouting Zangors, I think is a really good choice. Because people are going to want to run their melee assets straight into those and get them off the table ASAP, and just have them screened by a unit of 10 Zangors who scout up or heroic intervene from behind and stuff like that, I think is a great play too. I've got one more data sheet I need to tell you guys about. Because the other unit, there's one other unit that they've done so superbly well. And it's not one, it's one that is beloved to all our hearts, but we don't talk about it very much. Thousand Suns have one of the best rhinos in the game.
The way it's a workhorse, you know, of both the Eye of Terror and the Imperium.
And nothing gets done without the rhino. It's the usual rhino stat line. When you know it, you love it. But sorceress support is the data sheet rule. In your shooting phase, after this model is shot, select one enemy unit hit by one or more of those attacks. Until the end of the phase, each time a friendly model that disembarks on this transport this turn makes a psychic attack that targets that enemy unit, plus one to freaking hit and wound. Wow.
Love that. That's awesome.
Plus one. Okay.
The power. The power. I mean, flamers aren't going to mind that much as they're going to get the plus to hit, but the flamers with plus to wound as a 1 CP stratagem in the Rubricate attachment that gives you strength 5 on your bolt guns and psychic. So you'll be strength 5 hitting on twos, plus 1 to wound, possibly AP 4. You're just going to kill tanks with your bolt guns. And then you got the solar cannons as well.
Those ensorcelled bolts or whatever, like that's what, who doesn't love that? Like this, them cutting down with like this psychic blast coming from these ancient weapons. Absolutely love it.
More like some ensorcelled bull.
I'm glad you brought up the rhinos though, because this is important. Also, land raiders. Land raiders are a thing that we're starting to see a lot more play on the table, and they get land raiders in this. The Forge Fiends. All that stuff is available to them. So there's going to be tons of different ways to build the list, and the Codex seems to support it as well. Like there's attachments these things can thrive in, and there's a lot of synergy between the various units in the book, which I think is pretty cool design.
I'm hoping to see more of these units also now that Thousand Suns players don't have to pay the character tax for the Cabal points. I really can't wait to see if people start bringing like Forge Fiends and Mauler Fiends and things like that, since it's not actually going to take away from the efficiency of their armies to necessarily bring those things.
100% agree. I really want to see a good dispersion of unit options for Thousand Suns players. Because like you said, it's just been, I hate to use the words, but min-maxing characters and 5 rubrics. Characters
you had to. You had a eye of the needle to get to force all your abilities through.
Yeah.
And they're good abilities too. So you want to do it. Like there's no slight on the folks that they were doing that for efficiency. But now I think that it's widening a bit.
Yeah. Well, we're not saying it was the wrong thing to do. We're saying it's like they were almost forced into it, and we want better for our dusty brethren.
The power of a codex There is a new unit in here, the Sektar robots. These have been, they were debuted in a preview, and now we can tell you about, talk about the stats. So movement, they are vehicles, walkers, chaos, Zinch and Sektar robots. Infiltrate and stealth are their keywords. And movement 8, toughness 6, save 3+, 5+, invulnerable save, 4 wounds apiece, OC 1, and then once per battle, you can target the unit with a fire overwatch or heroic intervention for 0 command points. Unit goes into 2-4. They got some decent, they have weapons, they have do things. What can they do with an infiltrate and stealth?
They can flame stuff. They have a fairly decent flamer on them with infiltrate. Depending on what your opponent is also infiltrating with or scouting with, it becomes a huge threat if they go first. The range on the flamers are still just 12 inches. They do also have a melted gun option, which is somewhat scary, and that's also 12 inches. So the infiltrator rule is actually going to make it so that they might actually get those shots off. They are only 4 wounds, so, you know, there are a lot of things out there that can take them out, but there's a good chance that they'll get to shoot before anything happens to them.
That Melta, the Pyroflex Melta gun, is Melta 2. One attack, hits on 4s, which is a little rough, but strength 10, neg 4, and then d6 damage.
Yeah, so an extra strength over your regular Melta guns, which is quite good, especially going into a lot of the transports out there. Like, Sagittars feel really bad to shoot multi-melters into because you wound on 5s, and these guys will do a much better job of that. I'm a big fan of keeping them with using their ballistic skill as little as possible because it is ballistic skill 4. But having, because if you take the melee weapon, they'll get a flamer, a little baby flamer on the melee weapon as well. So they'll have D6 strength 5 AP 2 flamer shots, and then D3 strength 3 AP1 flamer shots as well. So that that Overwatch goes to another level again. And then they all come with the Hellfire missile racks that you'll find associated with your Scarab Occult Terminators. So look, I hate that they hit on 4s.
That's a 3 damage weapon.
Yeah.
With 2 attacks. So
it bothers me they hit on 4s, and I haven't found any way to get them to hitting on 3s. So I'm of the opinion, take the ballistic skill out of the equation. Flame, 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 baby.
The infiltrate and the stealth is I think, pretty good considering the weapon loadouts of this stuff. You want Melta, you want to get a little closer. Flamers, you want to get a little closer. So if you work that into your overall tapestry of things, then maybe that you get some power out of that.
If you've got a unit of 4 and you infiltrate right into your opponent's grill, like, you are not afraid, like, right into their grill. Let's say they're playing orcs. They've got green tide. Yeah. They have to move up and get stuck in. And you can just overwatch with this unit for free and get 4d6 strength 5 AP 2 overwatches, then 4d3 strength 3 AP 1 overwatches, and then still have 8, you know, rolls at 6s at 10, 2, 3. Like, these guys wallop on the Overwatch, and they do it for free as well. So, for me, these guys, I'll need to see some points to see how I actually evaluate them. Because a single unit of 2 just as a skirmisher to chuck on an objective and be like, well, you need to put out a real unit to take care of these guys because they're tougher than the average bear, and they'll risk an Overwatch.
Is it something that you actually want to take a unit of 4 to maximize that free Overwatch with, or...?
Yeah, if the points are right, a unit of 4 can make a lot of sense because you can just be a really big deterrent, especially in a lot of melee matchups. Whereas I think I'd prefer them as a unit of, like, as units of 2 for skirmish stuff, to be like, well, you can't use 5 guys, 5 aspect warriors ain't going to come take this from me, and I will kill 5 aspect warriors very easily. So this is a very good unit of 2 to just chuck on an expansion objective turn 1. Just be like, you're gonna do.
They do move 8, you know, which can sometimes be a premium, but Chaos Spawn also moves 8.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, but a Chaos Spawn, you know, they're not getting the same things. Like, infiltrate and stealth, like, there are some things to do here.
With
this. And I think it does just come down to kind of how you want to compose the army, what vibe you're going for.
And of course, if you did, because our vehicles, if you take them in the vehicle detachment, they will get a reroll to hit, to wound and damage if they're near a Slyker, which you kind of should try and have them near, which can mitigate a lot of the downsides on the Melta.
There'll be some play here because of that strength 10 Melta. I know we're talking about the flamers, but I really think that because Melta's, you know, they kind of have the role of, like, killing elite infantry. Now, I mean, like, reliably, of course, you can streak or whatever. But if you can turn that into, you know, like, a transport killing machine or you know, go to that next tier of vehicle very, very effectively doing all that melted damage, you know, maybe there's value. But again, to your point, it comes out to like, how hard is it to get them in the list for the points?
Yeah, because I don't think there's something you're going to like, because to me, they feel like Paragon warsuits. You know, same toughness, same wounds, move the same distance. They pack close range fire support like a Paragon warsuit does, plus with missiles like a Paragon warsuit does. They don't have a Morven Vial, fair. Few do. Only one does have a Morven Vial. That's fair. She's like the queen. She's the freaking boss of a whole faction. She's amazing and a High Lord. I'm just interested to see, because like if you just to build out a well-rounded list, I could see like a unit or one or two units of two being just really good first turn plays. Just really good. Just here's something turn one you have to solve, and you have to put out real units to solve it. You can't just throw out five scouts, five intercessors, and think you're gonna get this objective back. So I do like them for that. I think they're a decent tool there, because infiltrate is just like outside them. I don't think there's anything else in this book that has infiltrate on its data sheet.
Outside of that enhancement, I didn't see.
That's what I mean. Yeah. So nothing else has it on its data sheet. And when you're the only thing that has a thing for a book, it has intrinsic value. Like if you're the only thing that can make a play like that, it has intrinsic value to the codex.
Especially as the meta develops and you find yourself missing some maybe aspect of it, you go back and look and see what has not necessarily, you know, the everything that I need, but that critical, you know, sweet thing that it might help me win a game or two, and maybe this is it, maybe that's it. But there are so many attractive toys in this codex, and it's going to be interesting to see what the generals. We know there's a lot of like just diehard Thousand Suns players out there. I'm curious as to what their initial takes on the book are going to be, and how much it changes a little bit. Because outside of these models we just talked about, everything else is existing stuff out there right now. Like, so the generals, if you've got a deep hobby shelf, you know, you should be able to jump right into it.
Well, a deep hobby shelf for Thousand Suns is still only like 10 units. So you should be fine.
You know what I mean? Like comparatively of it, I think there's enough of the generals out there with enough of the models that have been, you know, that at their disposal for now, maybe a couple of editions that they can get on the table with all this new stuff fairly quickly.
We do have to have a moment of silence, though, because there's no cultists in here.
I lied. They did lose a unit.
They did.
Ba-bow.
F in chat. Right.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, I want to talk about, you're talking about getting them on the table. How would you paint these Thousand Suns? So the book suggests that you spray the models gold and then paint the blue parts. The other way of doing it is, of course, painting the blue parts and then painting the gold separately or a second. And I can see both ways. I do think that Retributor armor spray is awesome, but for me, I find it more difficult to paint the blue over the gold instead of the gold over the blue. But do you get the speed from the base, from the gold primer? Like, what's the trade-off?
I would have to play around with it, but if I had to approach it now, I would probably spray it gold, or in my case, I would dry brush it a couple times gold, and then I think that I would turn to opaque acrylic inks with really good flow, and I would use that with like the high pigmentation, so like artist grade inks, and I would just use the inks to fill in the panels. Because of the surface tension, it'll just like easily flow kind of into the cracks. And I think it would be a lot easier than using paint.
Maybe so. Well, I will say that both the Thousand Suns Blue and the Retributor Armor are both base colors. And so they really can work over each other and maybe save some time. But maybe it's just because I'm just conditioned to paint like the filigree and the trim and everything separately, that it's hard for me to go back to that. But I will say that the spray, you know, I've got a lot of experience with the Retributor armor spray with like Sanguinary Guard and that kind of stuff. It's good. It's very good. It can save some time.
It is, and I've used it before for other things. But I'm with you, Paul. I prefer. I mean, Night Lords, Chaos Space Marines, period, are a trim heavy army, and so but I prime black, and then I build up off of there, and I dry brush my Night Lords with a dark blue, and then I do the trim with a brass, and so that's I find it easier to build up that way, but I can understand as a different approach going in the inverse, but well, it might not be the direction I choose.
Let us know how y'all do it or would like to do it in the chat or in the comments. Thousand Suns got a lot to look forward to. This is going to be, I think, an amazing codex that should be just like a list builder's paradise, I think, for a period of time while they're trying to figure it out and use all these new overlapping rules and synergies. Hope y'all looking forward to it. But that's our show this week. It's been a pleasure hanging out with y'all, and we'll be back at it next week. Y'all got anything to add before we wrap up?
No, I don't know. Maybe like leave us your list ideas in the comments, because I'm really interested to see what everybody's going to get up to.
Absolutely. We'll see y'all next week, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Prospect scan is clear. I think they're gone. For now.